Matthew Wadsworth studied lute at London's Royal Academy of Music with Nigel North, after which he spent a year at the Royal Conservatory of Music in The Hague. Working in the UK, Europe and North America as a soloist and chamber musician, Matthew has appeared at most major concert halls and festivals and can often be heard on radio both in live performance and recordings. Now, Matthew has also recorded 8 acclaimed CDs and has had work commissioned for him by guitarist John Williams. Very impressive. Matthew is certainly someone who has never let blindness stand in his way. And we're lucky enough to have Matthew joining me now on the line. Hello.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. First of all, describe to us the lute and a bit about the history, because it's quite an ancient instrument, isn't it?
It is. So, to look at, if you can imagine a pear, as in the fruit, chopped down the middle and then turned on its side. So it has a kind of half egg-shaped body and then a neck, a fairly short neck that sticks out as you hold it to the left, and then a peg box, which is bent back at kind of right angles. So it originates in the Middle East with an instrument called the oud. And the oud came to Europe in the 14th century, and it kind of got Europeanized, tuning changed slightly. And then it was really the most popular instrument for, you know, a good 200 years. The best composers wrote for it in the Renaissance and Baroque period. It has huge repertoire. So we start with the 6-course lute. A course is a pair of strings. And then they just added on more and more strings as they needed them. And the composer said, well, actually, we want this piece to go down to a low C. And they just add on, you know, put another course on there. So that it goes really from the 6-course lute to the 13-course lute. And then we have the theorbo, which is a 2-meter-long kind of giant lute, which I play very often. And the instrument is used for a number of different ways. So for solo music accompanying singers, it's used in chamber music as a what we call continuo, which is providing the harmony and the chords. And the way I use it sometimes is even in contemporary music. As you mentioned, I have had pieces commissioned for me. So it's an instrument that has a past, present, and in my opinion, very definitely a future.
And so much history wrapped up in it. It's such a gentle sound as well. What drew you to it?
It was definitely what drew me to it was the music. Very unexpectedly, I started playing guitar when I was 6. Played classical guitar and electric guitar. I went to music school, and then I went to the Royal Academy as a guitarist. But I was already playing Renaissance and Baroque music transcriptions on the guitar. And then a friend asked me to play the theorbo, which is the giant lute, in an opera. And the Academy just happened to have a theorbo. So I borrowed it and had a go. And then I was asked for something else, and I kind of just slipped into it. And I thought, well, it's a little bit of upheaval to swap instruments, but this is so magical, and I love it. So I went for it. That's the short story. It was sort of more complicated than that, and it involved actually developing a system of Braille lute tablature, so I could play the lute. And lute tab is a bit like guitar tab. And I have actually recently launched an online platform called TalkingTab.com, and that makes guitar tab accessible for blind, visually impaired guitarists. So you can upload a guitar tab, Guitar Pro file, and it will spit out a screen reader friendly version. So I've tried to do things over the years that, you know, I've done them for myself, but then I think, well, how can this help other people as well?
Because it's quite a challenge, isn't it, with Braille music, because obviously you have to learn it still before you actually play.
Yeah, so with an instrument, any instrument where you are required to use two hands to play the instrument, which is most instruments, you kind of have to read a bar and then play it and then read another bar. But it's really, it's actually quite a good system, Braille music, once you get your head around it. There are, of course, other ways to learn music, not just from the dots, literally, but, you know, through audio and MIDI. Now we have Music XML. I think we're actually, you know, in 2018, we're in a really fortunate position as blind people and blind musicians, with just what we can do with technology. And of course, you've still got to get the music into your brain, but that will always be the case.
And this being RNIB's 150th year, I was wanting to talk about the Music Advisory Service, because you have been involved with that to a certain degree, haven't you?
I have, yes, not as an employee, but I first had contact with them it's probably 1990, when Bob Hall was there. And, they've been really useful to me. I think you've always got to take initiative in whatever you do. You can't expect people to do everything for you, but they've certainly been really helpful in helping to get music transcribed before there was automated technology. And in more recent years, there's a fund called the Elizabeth Eaglebot Memorial Fund, and that was set up to help blind and visually impaired musicians with their careers, and they've been essential to the development of my career. And it's run by Sally Zimmerman, who's just amazing, great person. I think if you know, they're a great port of call for anyone involved in music.
Now, can you remember your first live performance? Was it nerve-wracking?
Good question. I mean, I've been performing for so long. I do remember at junior school when I was around 7 or 8. I remember that quite clearly. And I also remember times a little bit later. Yeah, I think they were nervous, but I always loved doing it. I think as you get older and more experienced, you learn to kind of channel the energy in a different way. So instead of being nerves, it's more like excitement. I remember the way I used to feel almost a bit crazy when I was playing, and that was good. But I channel it in a more positive way now.
Have you ever faced prejudice, would you say, in your career because you're blind?
Yeah, I don't think so. There's always resistance. It's just that any profession has resistance in it. I've been really happy that people are interested in me and my music because of the music. So if I get a good review for a CD, they hardly ever mention that I'm blind. They just talk about the music and the playing. And I've positioned it that way. I was kind of clear from the outset that I wanted to be, you know, treated like everybody else. And I think the profession has really respected that. I would say in some orchestral situations, I tend to kind of be a soloist if I play with an orchestra these days. But as a continuo player, I think there has been some resistance, as in, well, how could he fit in? How could he follow a conductor? And some people are really comfortable with that. Some people are not. And that's fine. I think in life you have to surround yourself with the right people and people who get you. So, in answer to your question, I would say no. I think I've been really well treated.
Quite a challenge, though, isn't it, working in an orchestra if you can't read the signals from a conductor, etc.?
Well, with Baroque music, not so much, because it's so much of it's to do with sound and listening. I think people have a false sense of what it is to be a chamber musician or an orchestral musician. You know, if it was the Mahler Symphony and you sat 100 feet away playing the trumpet, that's different. But in a Baroque orchestra where it's small forces, the conductor is more of a facilitator. It's nothing to do with where you come in or play in the right place. That's actually to do with listening. So, I think most people would agree with that, but you still, to be honest, in baroque music, the conductor's often the person organising the show, and it's down to their personality.
So it's a bit of baroque and roll?
Yeah, kind of.
2018's been a big year for you, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been amazing, really, with this a new Theobo concerto that was written for me by composer Stephen Goss. And it's the first time that this has been done for the 17th century Theobo, using it in a modern context. So, the piece came out very well. I practiced very hard, and I think I've played it 8 times so far. I've recorded it with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra, which is that recording's coming out early next year. It's great to do new things as well as doing old things.
Yeah, it's like a fusion though, isn't it?
Yes. The piece is, it really shows the past, present and future of the instrument. But it's not just a kind of flashy solo piece. It's actually, the orchestral part's quite challenging. And there were 7 movements, and 3 of those are, they're called interludes, and they showcase the violin, the cello, and the viola, respectively, with kind of accompaniment from the theobo and the double bass. So it shows the theobo is also a chamber music instrument, as well as a solo one. I think there's a lot of excitement about this, so I'm really looking forward to releasing it next year and seeing what people make of it.
Now, this is a difficult one, but I'd like to ask you this. For those who are living with, they might be losing their sight now, or they may be young and they have no sight, or the prospect of losing their sight, what advice would you give them if, you know, they have a real love of music and wanting to perform as a musician?
Well, I think it's probably might be one of the best professions you can go into as a visually impaired person. Like I said, you're not going to get any special treatment. Music's a great leveller, so it doesn't matter if you've got one leg or you can't see, or you're from a posh background or a working class background. It's just what you can do at the end of the day. So pursue it and find ways and work hard. That's really the bottom line. It's not an easy profession. But most aren't these days. It's very competitive. But if you love it, do it. And I think that goes with anything, whether it's music or whatever your passion is. Really follow it. I mean, we only get one chance.
Very well said. And we were mentioning the RNIB Music Advisory Service. If you'd like to get in touch with them, it's mas@rnib.org.uk. So that's mas@rnib.org.uk. That's the Music Advisory Service. And you can phone them on 0121 665 4224. That's 0121 665 4224. Well, it's been absolutely fascinating and a pleasure to chat with you. Matthew Wadsworth, we wish you the best for the future and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Simon. Thanks a lot.